Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
The Troubles erupt. Communal violence between Protestants and Catholics. The British Army called in. The IRA on the offensive. For almost 30 years, violence reigns across Northern Ireland. Thousands lose their lives in the conflict. A conflict which was ended with new power-sharing arrangements agreed in 1998. The Good Friday Agreement.
Yes, 71.12%.
That agreement was seen by many as an incredible achievement. But actually, it wasn't Northern Ireland's first attempt at power sharing.
Certainly think that this power sharing system, the new method of government, must be given every chance to succeed.
In 1973, the Sunningdale Agreement established power sharing between the UUP, the SDLP and the Alliance Party.
All of us in the executive, SDLP, Alliance and ourselves, are quite determined as individuals and as a team to see that this executive works for the peace, for the order and for the good government of Northern Ireland, and I believe we can.
But Sunningdale was met with a fierce backlash from the unionist community and from loyalists in particular.
We have had enough pussyfooting, enough appeasement, enough treachery!
They strongly opposed the sharing of political power and the proposed involvement of the Republic of Ireland's government in Northern Ireland's affairs.
I am against Republicans joining in power sharing in an executive in Northern Ireland.
A nationwide strike was organised by the Ulster Workers' Council and Loyalist paramilitaries in protest.
It is our intention, no matter how long it may take, to win back for Ulster a parliament that speaks for its people.
Eventually, in May 1974, it brought Northern Ireland to a standstill, bringing an end to Sunningdale and power sharing after just 4 months.
Was the fall of the executive the price that had to be paid for the ending of the strike?
In the end, it certainly was, no doubt about that.
In this special three-part series of The Bell Tell, we'll examine this fascinating period. What was the Sunningdale Agreement? How did the Ulster workers' strike begin? And was Sunningdale always destined to fail?
If power sharing works, and it's seen to work over time, then arguments for the restoration of majority unionist rule in the future will fall flat.
In part one, we'll hear from Dr. Michael Kerr, an historian, Don Anderson, who's a former BBC journalist, and the former principal private secretary to Brian Faulkner, Dr. Robert Ramsay. Dr. Michael Kerr is an historian and a political scientist currently working on British government policy towards Northern Ireland in the 1980s. He's author of The Destructors, the story of Northern Ireland's lost peace process. I began by asking him a very simple question. What was Sunningdale?
The Sunningdale Agreement, well, it was a constitutional experiment at a time of great chaos, really. I mean, Northern Ireland was on the brink of civil war. In the early years of the 70s, there were hundreds of people being killed every year. Internment had been tried to quash the IRA insurgency, and Brian Faulkner's government had been put in this sort of put on notice by the Westminster government that the security situation had to be, you know, sorted out for unionist rule to continue. And when that failed, the British Prime Minister Edward Heath, he sent William Whitelaw to Northern Ireland, and he became Northern Ireland's first Secretary of State, and he gave him the mission, really the task, of bringing about a completely different form of government. You know, their thinking was that Northern Ireland could never be governed again by one party that drew its support primarily from one community, and a different form of government would have to be found that gave the minority community a voice and a participatory role in government. And over the next 12 months, Whitelaw carved out what was a mandatory power sharing agreement, and that was what was negotiated at Sunningdale alongside a Council of Ireland, which was to bring the two parts of Ireland together.
Well, I want to see a return to a normal, peaceful community. I believe that is something that the vast majority of the population of Northern Ireland also want. I believe the whole community now has a chance to move forward. And this is the basis on which I am acting.
Don Anderson is a former BBC journalist. He's the author of 14 Days, a history of the 1974 Ulster Workers' Council strike. I asked him, what did Sunningdale entail?
The Sunningdale Agreement was fashioned in southern England between the then monolithic Unionist Party and the SDLP. And it should have worked. There were two strands to it. One, power sharing. Unionist, Republican, Catholic, Protestant. And two, a Council of Ireland.
We have set up an institution which will encompass north and south of the border, namely the Council of Ireland, which will enable Irishmen on both sides of the border to at least begin to talk and to get to know each other. And I'm quite confident that in the process of talking, they will be able to dispel many of the hostilities and animosities that have for so long separated them.
And of those two strands, the one that really stuck in the craw of unionism was the Council of Ireland, more than power sharing.
Michael, did the Sunningdale executive operate collectively as a single government?
It did. I mean, that was the very idea. And it had to have a sort of unity of purpose, and decisions had to be made unanimously. And it was only whenever it was no longer able to do that and act in that sense that government broke down. So that was very much the thinking behind it. Whitelaw's thinking was this was last chance for the unionists. He was telling Faulkner, if you go into government with the SDLP, you will have the opportunity again to run your own affairs and to govern Northern Ireland. And part of the sweetener to that was you would have the SDLP within a government that were bound by collective responsibility to support the police. So if the Irish government and the SDLP were supporting the RUC, then there was every chance that Faulkner would have been able to have been successful in reducing the IRA threat and the threat of paramilitary violence.
I'm off what they would call the Good Friday Agreement generation, and it was incredibly difficult to come to that agreement. Now, obviously, there was a flare-up and trouble, etc. But in 1973, I mean, that followed 1972, which was the bloodiest year of the Troubles, it seems, I suppose, almost unimaginable that there could have been some sort of agreement on it. I mean, I use the cliche, you know, that the Good Friday Agreement was Sunningdale for slow learners, but it does seem amazing that there was anything like Sunningdale at that time. But I wonder, to what extent was it dictated and to what extent was it negotiated?
Well, that's a very good question, because British Prime Minister Edward Heath's sort of attitude towards Northern Ireland would have been that Whitelaw should go there and, like a sort of latter-day colonial viceroy, quickly impose a settlement upon the troublesome Irish. And he didn't care very much what that settlement was. And although he accepted that the Irish government would have to have a role in representing the minority community. So whereas you had a British Prime Minister, Edward Heath, who saw things in rather black and white terms, he'd sent over William Whitelaw, who saw, you know, the nuance of politics, the grey issues, and his instruction from Heath essentially was to break up the Unionist Party, to break up one-party rule, to shatter the Unionist hegemonic force, and then put Humpty Dumpty back together in the form of, you know, a moderate Unionist representative that could govern alongside the SDLP.
The people of Northern Ireland, of all persuasions, have got to live together. This is one community, and reconciliation is the only hope in the long run, and living together is the only possible hope.
And as part of that, he spent a lot of time of his first year in government building up the SDLP and helping them function as a coherent political party coming out of the civil rights movement. So it was negotiated, but the parameters of what could be negotiated were very narrowly defined. So in the Northern Ireland White Paper and then the constitutional document that follow in 1973, the British government is really making it clear that a united Ireland is not on, an independent Northern Ireland is not on, continuation of majority rule is not on, and some form of compromise between unionist and nationalist communities is, you know, the desired outcome. But Heath certainly held out the sort of stick, if you like, to the Irish government and the SDLP, that if they didn't accept this form of government, then some form of integration was the only outcome.
Don Anderson thinks the savagery of the Troubles give impetus to the quest for power sharing.
It's easily forgotten that in 1972, the Conservative government prorogued, in other words, abolished, the old Stormont Parliament. And it's hard to convey now the shock in the body Protestant to that event. It hit them between the eyes. They thought that Stormont was there forever and a day. And the shock for loyalism, for unionist politics, was really, really quite strong. So to get Sunningdale an agreement for power sharing the following year was quite a remarkable political event. Many said that it couldn't be done. But it was done, because at that time, the Troubles were reaching a crescendo. The early 70s were a ghastly period for violence. There were assassinations, bombings. You were waking up every day to news of utter mayhem. And that, of course, drove some of the impetus behind the Sunningdale Agreement.
It has been my view from the beginning that we should decide of our own free will and as a responsible government in command of events to press on with a continuing programme of change to secure a united and harmonious community.
In the Council of Ireland, composed of members of the Executive in the Republic of Ireland, Donal Hayden, the Northern Ireland Executive and the Northern Ireland Assembly, and this would act in a consultative role. It occurs to me that if you propose the Council of Ireland in 2024, it would still be very controversial and that almost all unionists would be opposed to it. So it almost seems to me to be amazing that any unionist signed up to this even in 1973. Is that what it was primarily focused on, or was it about power sharing?
Well, not initially. Brian Faulkner did not focus on the Council of Ireland in the run-up to the Sunningdale Conference and in the talks with the SDLP. Faulkner wanted something else entirely. What Faulkner believed that he needed to sell a power-sharing agreement to the unionist electorate was changes on Articles 2 and 3 of the Irish Constitution, and also for the Irish government to recognise Northern Ireland, and through that, to recognise the principle of consent, that the constitutional status of Northern Ireland would not be changed without the consent of its people. And the third thing that he wanted was extradition. He wanted significant improvement in the security situation in the north, and the Republic of Ireland held the key to that because a lot of IRA units were operating on a cross-border hit-and-run basis. There was no extradition agreement between the two states, and there was very loose collaboration between the Garda Síochána and the RUC, and none at all really between the Irish Army and the British Army. So Faulkner wanted those issues to be really resolved. Because there was no ceasefire. The Sunningdale Agreement didn't take place to the silence of smoking guns. It took place with bombs and bullets flying in Belfast and across the province from both sides.
Sectarian killings were now a feature of Belfast life. By the end of the year, 87 Catholics and 43 Protestants had been killed for no better reason than their religion.
So what he desperately needed to quieten down his critics was tough security measures. Now, the SDLP and the Irish government wanted the Council of Ireland to have a role to play in that, and Heath didn't. That's one other side of the debate. But Faulkner didn't see a great problem in the Council of Ireland. The problem with the Council of Ireland was that, you know, this was the golden egg for the Irish government and for John Hume and the SDLP. They insisted that it had to have executive functions so that it could evolve into an All-Ireland Parliament in time. The SDLP and the Irish government, they were acting with a unity of purpose, whereas Edward Heath did not see himself as in any way going to Sunningdale to back up the unionist position. In his mind, Whitelaw had, you know, achieved what he wanted to achieve in carving out a power-sharing settlement, and it was really up to the Irish to determine what a Council of Ireland looked like. And Heath's main concern was preserving security powers and ensuring that the British government had oversight of every aspect of policing and justice in Northern Ireland. I mean, the main British interest was that the British Army was never going to be tarnished or under the control in any way by a subordinate parliament in the United Kingdom, which it had been over the first couple of years of the Troubles. Heath's main concern was ending the embarrassment that Northern Ireland was to the British government on the international stage as quickly as possible.
Dr. Robert Ramsay was Principal Private Secretary to Brian Faulkner in 1972. He wasn't in Northern Ireland during the Sunningdale period, but he had many conversations with Brian Faulkner about it. I asked him if Brian Faulkner genuinely believed that Sunningdale was a potential solution to Northern Ireland's problems.
Yes, he wasn't very happy about the Sunningdale agreement. He felt that the significant strand of ultra-unionism was really outnumbered, that he thought against him was nationalism, shall we say, supported by the Dublin government, and that the British government didn't look on him as an ally. And so he thought that Sunningdale, the outcome of it, was the best of a bad job. But he thought that it was loaded against unionism. He felt that in any new settlement, obviously, unionism was going to have to give up things, and the winners overall were obviously going to be non-unionists, but that was inevitable. But he thought that in retrospect, certainly, that the nationalists or the SDLP, backed by the Dublin government, overplayed their hand in terms of projecting the thing as a massive step towards Irish unity. So he thought that it was not a very good outcome, but it was the best that could be achieved from his point of view, and that he was determined to try to make it work. And he thought that people like John Hume didn't need to emphasize all that, you know, the Council of Ireland aspect, and that by running up and down to Dublin and emphasizing the Council of Ireland aspects, that they didn't need to do that with their own support, because their own support looked on the very fact that the power-sharing executive had been set up as a great triumph for them, as in many ways it was, and that they didn't need to over-egg the pudding, so to speak.
Partnership is a word that we have used in our election manifesto. Partnership is a word that we will continue to use, not power-sharing. Partnership between the different traditions in this part of Ireland, and partnership between North and South, building a new North and a new Ireland.
Articles 2 and 3 of the Irish Constitution claimed the entire island as the national territory of the Republic of Ireland, much to unionism's anger. It does seem that the Irish government of the early 1970s took that claim quite seriously. Here's Michael Kerr.
Yeah, they were. There was no way they were going to give it up. And there was no way that the coalition government was going to expose itself to the criticism from Fianna Fáil. I mean, whenever the Sunningdale negotiations were taking place in December 1973, the main concern of the Fine Gael Labour coalition government was how what they were agreeing with the British government was going to be perceived by Fianna Fáil opposition in Dublin, rather than how it was going to be received by Faulkner's supporters or detractors.
Do you think it could show sufficient benefit to persuade the majority of people in the North that there should be reunification?
I believe that in time this could happen, but nevertheless, in the meantime, we should be fully alive to our aspirations for a united Ireland, and I believe that that can grow in time and in agreement. And I believe that the functioning of this court, or functioning of this council, in economic, social, and legal spheres could have that effect.
You know, from the Irish government's perspective, going to Sunningdale was the most important political event that had taken place in Irish politics and history since Michael Collins negotiated the Anglo-Irish Treaty in 1921. That was the significance. The whole government went to Sunningdale. Whereas for Edward Heath, William Whitelaw wasn't even there. Edward Heath had withdrawn William Whitelaw before the Sunningdale negotiations, having come to the conclusion that he'd done his work. He'd come up with a power-sharing framework and, you know, he'd got it in place. And he withdrew him to focus on more important British issues.
This was a power-sharing executive. Basically, it involved the SDLP. I mean, do we have any indications as to how that affected the SDLP's support? How were nationalists feeling about it? Because, I mean, to this very day, again, there isn't universal support for the security forces in the nationalist community. So, I mean, that seems to me like a big thing at the time.
For most nationalists, the Sunningdale Agreement and everything that it contained was a gigantic leap forward. You know, it was sort of consolidating all the gains that were potentially there from the collapse of the unionist state. I mean, for nationalists to have guaranteed seats in government was a massive advance. For Stormont, unionist rule to have been brought to an end was a massive advance. For the Irish government to have a role in Northern Ireland's politics was a massive advance. And for those All-Ireland structures, maybe to have some, you know, role in oversight for, you know, police recruitment, the appointment of a policing board or authority, those were big advances as well. And also, the Sunningdale executive was representative of Faulkner's group of unionists that were pledged to support the power-sharing proposals. There were no seats empty for the DUP or Vanguard or Faulkner's internal opponents to take up should they decide to get with the programme at a later date.
Certainly think that this power-sharing system, the new method of government, must be given every chance to succeed. After all, it is the result of the freely declared wish of the people of Northern Ireland themselves, and although, of course, there are people who do not agree with it, I still think that the vast majority want it to work, and I believe it should be given every chance of succeeding.
January 1974. The Unionist Chief Executive of Northern Ireland, Brian Faulkner, has succeeded in getting power sharing up and running. Despite that, or because of that, he lost the leadership of his party within days.
Do you see the executive being able to function with the possibility of disruptive tactics in the Assembly?
We are certainly not going to allow disruptive tactics in the Assembly in any way to affect our working as an executive. All of us in the executive, SDLP, Alliance and ourselves, are quite determined as individuals and as a team to see that this executive works for the peace, for the order and for the good government of Northern Ireland, and I believe we can.
Faulkner's problem was
that the majority of the UUP rejected Sunningdale and rejected the Council of Ireland.
We'll oppose it by every constitutional means possible. We don't recognise the executive, we don't recognise its members in the Assembly, and therefore we are determined to bring this un-British system to an end.
Do you see any possibility of reconciliation with Mr Faulkner?
Well, if Mr Faulkner wants to come back and accept party policy, of course we'd be glad to see him come back. But undoubtedly he cannot come back and try to run a party on policies that's not agreed by the policy-making body of the party.
But nevertheless, power-sharing is working. So how did the tide turn for Faulkner? How did the politics turn to protest? How did the momentum for the Ulster workers' strike get going? Here's Michael Kerr.
So after Sunningdale, despite the fact that Faulkner loses the leadership of the official Unionist Party because he hasn't delivered on Articles 2 and 3, he hasn't delivered on security, he hasn't delivered on recognition, he then is able to exploit the fact that he is the weakest link. He then goes back and begins in January and February 1974 and attempt to renegotiate the Sunningdale Agreement and effectively water down and neutralise the Council of Ireland and its executive powers and its grand infrastructure. Because the Irish government have come to Sunningdale with an enormous list of powers and functions that the Council of Ireland is going to have. And Faulkner is able to say over the course of January, February and March to the Irish government, look, if you pursue this and we continue on this basis, the Sunningdale Agreement is going to collapse and you are going to get the blame. Now, not much happens until the general election takes place. And on February the 14th of 1974, Heath loses the Westminster general election.
And the story of the night then is that we believe that Labour is now set for having a clear overall majority. For Mr. Wilson, then, there are the pleasures and the pains of remaking his government. For Mr. Heath, he is no doubt going to remain at the disposal of his party.
And in Northern Ireland, 11 out of the 12 MPs that are returned to Westminster are returned on an anti-Sunningdale ticket. The slogan that they used was, "Dublin is just a Sunningdale away."
And we are now saying to the Mother of Parliaments, so far and no further. Yeah. We have had enough pussyfooting, enough appeasement, enough treachery.
The 11 United Ulster Unionists, once they're across in London, are banking on their newfound unity, bringing a dividend of considerable influence over the government's Northern Ireland policy.
So Paisley and Craig are able to, you know, sort of throw the gauntlet down to the new British Prime Minister, Harold Wilson, and say, look, we represent the majority position in Northern Ireland, the United Ulster Unionist Council, and their MPs. And Faulkner is able to go south, and he repeatedly sends Ken Bloomfield to Dublin to renegotiate the Council of Ireland.
There were people who were concerned about the Council of Ireland and who felt that the Dublin government wasn't playing its part in fulfilling its obligations in that. Now, we've made it very clear today that there cannot and there will not be a Council of Ireland unless all parties to that agreement fulfil their obligations, and that means the London government, the Dublin government, and we ourselves in the Northern Ireland coalition.
So whenever there's a vote in May over the Sunningdale Agreement in the Northern Ireland Assembly, there's chaos. It takes place at a moment when Faulkner has got his own way. The Irish government agree that there will effectively be no executive powers, that it should just have a consultancy role. And Hume and the SDLP, locked into the executive and not wishing to relinquish their ministerial roles, accept this. And accept the reality of this. In effect, the SDLP and the Irish government, you know, recognise that they over-negotiated greatly at the Sunningdale talks, and Faulkner has managed to rebalance the agreement by April, May 1974. So the reason that the Ulster Workers' Council then, you know, with the political leadership of Bill Craig and Ian Paisley and the muscle on the streets of the UDA, the reason that they call an unconstitutional stoppage to try and bring the government down is because Paisley and Craig are frightened that Faulkner has succeeded in, you know, renegotiating the Council of Ireland. And if power sharing works, and it seemed to work over time, then arguments for the restoration of majority unionist rule in the future will fall flat, and a culture of power sharing will develop between unionists and nationalists, and this will be seen as a normal form of government.
I am against Republicans joining in power sharing in an executive in Northern Ireland.
You're saying you couldn't share power with the SDLP in the cabinet?
I'm just saying that quite right, yes, I am. That's my view.
Now, Dublin, Mr. West, what exactly is your attitude to cooperation across the border?
I can't see any need for a Council of Ireland whatsoever, other than to set us up for a United Ireland at some not too distant future date.
You didn't rule out any physical violence.
That's right.
In the Assembly.
Yeah.
What sort of demonstrations would you accept?
Well, anything, any sort of peaceful protest that people are entitled to have, I don't see any harm in that at all.
In the next episode of this three-part series, we turn to the Ulster workers' strike.
It is our intention, no matter how long it may take, to win back for Ulster a parliament that speaks for its people.
How did it come about?
You know, Paisley and Craig were telling the UDA and their supporters that the Sunningdale executive delivered Northern Ireland into a United Ireland.
How was it run?
The paramilitaries swung into action, and the factories over the next 3 days were emptied.
And how did it win?
The army did not want to get involved in this, because once you have the army taking on the UDA, which is 40,000 strong in that point, you're talking civil war territory.
This special series of The Bell Tale was written and co-produced by myself, Kieran Dunbar. Graham Davidson was the sound designer and co-producer, with Olivia Peden as assistant producer. The clips you heard were from AP, the BBC, Channel 4 and RTE.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.